Coffee in Space is a podcast by S. Daniel Smith that puts the best in established and up-and-coming science fiction and fantasy writers in front of you, their readers. Dan's goal is to help you learn more about who they are as people, how they write, and how they live. Whether you're listening to this podcast at home, or in your car, or somewhere in between, Dan hopes to transport you to the crew lounge on an intergalactic spaceship, where you can have a cup of your favourite coffee with science fiction and fantasy authors. So sit back, listen in, and enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, your old friend Dan Smith here with another author of speculative fiction. Today it's my privilege to welcome Lee Bacon to the podcast. Lee writes both science fiction and fantasy for the middle grade audiences. Also with me today, she actually just walked out to get water, but also with me today is my 8-year-old daughter, Hannah, who may or may not decide to talk at some point. We'll see. Anyway, Lee, welcome to the show, and thanks for having Coffee in Space with us today.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's great to be with you.
So, Lee, let's start with a really fun piece of news. I happened to learn about this while I was doing some background research for you. Tell us about Audible recognizing one of your stories as the number one Audible book in 2020 for kids.
So that was a kind of a total surprise. I didn't see it coming. So I wrote a book that came out last year in 2020, or I guess it's this year, but it'll be last year when people are hearing this. It's called Interview with a Robot. It's an Audible original. And I wrote it specifically for the audio format. This was not something that had been adapted, a book that had been adapted or anything like that. This was like something that I wrote actually as a script, with knowing that there were going to be a lot of different voices, a lot of sound effects and stuff. So it really works best as, as kind of like a, an old, what you would think of in the old days is like kind of like a radio drama or something like that. But now it's, for Audible. And I wrote it. It was then produced by Audible. They did an amazing job with it, brought in a bunch of really talented voice actors, and great production and everything. And then it came out and it was, I think very successful. It got a lot of people listening to it, downloading it, reviewing it. And that's always, great to have that kind of response. But that was kind of, I didn't really see anything happening with it beyond that. And then, kind of a couple of maybe 2 weeks ago or so, I heard from my editor at Audible, congratulations, your book was picked as the number one kids book, kids audio title on Audible by the editors. So that was like, that was kind of a thrill. And then a moment, like maybe 5-10 minutes later, really, really soon thereafter, I'm also an Audible subscriber. And so I got this like little push alert on my phone saying, check out our top titles of the year. And then I could, I clicked on it and there was Interview with the Robot there among the, all the different, titles there. So it was kind of cool to like, it was like a 1-2 punch of like this fun, email from my editor, and then like Audible, the official thing that like everyone gets, also, telling me what I just learned. So that was super exciting. I'm still kind of digesting it.
Oh, I bet. That's got to take seeing your name in print to a whole new level. I think that I'm fascinated by how you wrote the story. And now I need to go get a hold of this. Tell us kind of the synopsis for the story itself. What will people kind of give us the reason to pick up the book?
Okay. It's funny the way you phrase that. Pick up the book, rather than, because that's the way I think about it too.
Yeah, I didn't catch that until I looked away. You're right. That is funny.
Yeah. There's no actual book. You'd have to pick up your phone. So the basic story is, it starts off, it's called Interview with the Robot. I like that title. It really, kind of ties into like this very familiar title, Interview with the Vampire, which even if people haven't seen the movie or read the book or the series of books by Anne Rice, everyone's kind of, a lot of people kind of at least are familiar with this, with this title. And so I kind of use that as a jumping off point. But basically it's a 12-year-old girl is arrested for shoplifting. And we kind of pick up when she's in the interrogation room. And the woman who's interrogating her works with child services and is brought in basically like to say, you know, to try to figure out like what's going on with this girl. And then the story is kind of like built around the framework of this long interrogation that the child welfare services person has with Eve, the girl. And, you know, very quickly we learn she's nothing like any kid you've ever met before. She claims to have no last name, no family. And then she kind of rolls up her sleeve and reveals that she has this spot of her arm that's missing. And instead of, you know, being blood and bone and what you would expect to see under, you know, if a piece of your skin was pulled away, she has like, you know, metal and actuator joints and wires and all this weird stuff in there. And, you know, just immediately proves like she's not human. She's a robot. And then, so then she kind of like, there are a lot of different flashbacks between from the interrogation to like moments in her past where we see that she like was basically started off as this cube inside of a, you know, giant, you know, computer lab as the kind of personal project of this, you know, super genius tech developer and his 12-year-old son, who, you know, is kind of there to kind of like learn and basically is almost like basically homeschooled, but instead of at home in this big office building. And, you know, gradually Eve develops and evolves from this, you know, little, basically like an Alexa, you know, like the Amazon Alexa that you might see in your house, from that, you know, an artificial intelligence box to something, you know, an actual like robot with a body who and a voice. And, you know, then she has to like learn to basically be human. And like, what is it that makes you human? So there are a lot of really fun and interesting things to explore in writing that, in terms of just like artificial intelligence and, you know, like kind of new technological concepts that we're still grappling with, like artificial intelligence and these devices that are everywhere in our lives, and you know, like robotics and stuff. But it also kind of grapples with huge concepts that kind of go back to the beginning of, you know, sort of people thinking about these things, which is just like, what does it mean to be alive? What is, you know, what's the purpose of life? What is a family? What is a human being? And how does a human being exist in this world and things like that? So it's kind of fun to kind of like merge those two things and also try to be fun and funny and fast paced and all that good stuff.
Hey, that's all really fascinating. I'm going to have to get a hold of that story. And congratulations again for that. So if I may backtrack just a little, I first learned about your writing by checking out the book Legendtopia from the library, the first book of the Legendtopia duology. Mm-hmm. I've since read that entire book, and my daughter Hannah and I have started it together. Now, like I said, Legendtopia was book one of the duology. Mm-hmm. You also wrote another fantasy series for kids. Tell us about your middle grade fantasy.
Well, yeah. So Legendtopia is the closest thing. I would say that's really the true fantasy in that it's, you know, it's about, you know, a lot of these concepts that, in fact, I wrote it kind of like sort of to build on what everyone is, even if you never read fantasy, you're familiar with the concept of like ogres and dragons and you know, fairies and these things. So kind of built it to sort of play with some of these conventions. That was my second series. That was a two book series. My first series was called Joshua Dredd. That often gets classified as sci-fi. I kind of think of it as just like a superhero, supervillain story, but that's a three book story about a kid who just wants to be normal, but he has supervillains for parents. And it's kind of hard to have a normal life when your parents are trying to destroy the world. I'm sure you can relate, Hannah. And then, you know, so that was a three book thing. That was kind of my first adventures in publishing. Then came Legendtopia, the two book series. And then I had a couple of these Audible originals. The first one was called The Mystery of Alice. That's kind of more, yeah, like the title implies, it's more of a mystery suspense thing for, you know, slightly older audience. It's a little bit more young adult, YA. And then Interview with the Robot is kind of, yeah, kind of could be for everyone, but aimed at a slightly young, you know, the same audience as Legendtopia and Joshua Dredd. And then my most recent sort of conventional book is The Last Human, which is kind of, that's definitely like in the purely sci-fi realm about, it's narrated by a robot. Takes place in the future when humans have gone extinct and robots rule the world. And then it turns out there is still a human, a 12-year-old girl who then meets this robot, and they have to kind of go on a journey together.
If it's clear that you not just like other genres, multiple genres, but that you also are skilled at writing in different genres, do you approach these different projects, or did you approach these different projects with different mindsets, or is your process different for how you write them, or do you find the story is the story, as it were, and you just approach each one as its own or whatnot? Just take us through that for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I really don't think that much about genre. For me, you know, with the things that I read and the things that I write, it always starts with the voice, you know, the voice of the story, the narrator, but also the voice of kind of how am I bringing my own kind of writing self into this project. And so whether it's, you know, takes place on another planet or, you know, is kind of like big comic book romp or a mystery or a fantasy thing or a sci-fi thing, that's almost kind of beside the point. You know, I don't think that much about the genre besides just like, this is a cool story I want to tell and how do I want to tell it? And then, you know, everything else kind of falls into place from there. Yeah, I guess because I tend to kind of read pretty widely, you know, and I'm not like exclusively, you know, reading sci-fi or fantasy or, you know, literary fiction or kids' books. I think because of that, maybe when I sit down to write a book, it's just kind of like, oh, that's a cool idea. I think I want to spend I want to explore that and see if I can spend 6 or 8 months of my life trying to turn this thing into a novel.
We're going to take a question. It's based on what you just said. So I think it's a good time to ask this question.
Awesome.
Or what kinds of books do you like to read?
What kind of books do I like to read? That's a great question, Hannah. Okay. So I, like I said, I like to read everything. I will say I tend to read mostly stuff for adults. I don't read a lot, even though I write for kids. I tend to read mostly stuff that's written for grownups. And I also, I don't get too far into like the genre stuff like sci-fi or fantasy. I tend to kind of like, if it is a sci-fi or fantasy thing, I like it to kind of be grounded in some kind of reality that I can understand rather than something that's, you know, purely, you know, feels like it just kind of like takes place on another planet or something. But, you know, for me, I mentioned voice before, like that matters to me a lot when I'm writing something, is finding a voice that just kind of I can connect to and I want to spend time writing in that voice. And that's really something I look for in the books that I'm reading too, is just kind of like maybe the voice is kind of wise and you know, sort of you know, kind of always knows what's going on, or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe the person, you know, the character who's like narrating it, or third person narrator, whoever it might be, is kind of like a little bit behind, and you know, we as the reader kind of know more than they do, which is maybe the case with like something like Huckleberry Finn, you know, by Mark Twain, that's, you know, narrated by this kid who you know, we the reader kind of tend to like be a little bit more in the know with what's going on than he might be. And that's part of the fun. But yeah, I will say since you're the right age, the series that really got me into writing for kids was Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Did you read those books, the Percy Jackson books?
So we've had them in our house.
Yeah.
My wife is actually a big fan of those.
Oh, cool.
Hannah's giving me the look that maybe she doesn't remember reading them herself, but they have definitely made their rounds in our house for sure.
I may have, but if I have, I never remembered because I may have read more books than I used to when I was young.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. There are lots of books where I like kind of think, wait, did I read that? Or, you know, did I just kind of think about reading it? And those were fun. And I mean, that when I talk about voice, you know, that one has a voice that's like kind of funny. And, you know, even when he's being chased by monsters, he's like kind of joking about like, oh, this, you know, this monster smells like day old tacos or something like that. You know, it's like, there's always, even when he's in peril, you know, there's always some like joke, you know, around the corner. And I really loved those, in addition to them being just well-written and you know, page turners. And of course they're hugely popular. But those were some, you know, books for young readers that really I connected with early on and inspired me with especially my first series, Joshua Dredd.
Yeah. So that's good. Cause I think it's always interesting to me. I've had a couple of YA, I don't know that I've had a lot of middle grade, but I've had a couple of YA authors on, and it's always interesting what they read and where they get their kind of their ideas from. So thanks for taking that question.
Sure. Of course.
Okay. So what's it like writing for the YA and middle grade audience? And you mentioned that you read a lot of adult books. Have you ever thought about writing for adult aged audiences? So there's kind of a two part there, but I would love your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah. Okay. So it's as far as like what it's like, I think, you know, because I do get the question sometimes, like, do you think about like who your audience is, or are you trying to kind of like make the language easier to understand, or doing something that where you know that it's going to be read by younger people? And I really don't, because I've met enough kids through, you know, visiting schools and doing events as an author for kids books. Like, I know like kids are really sophisticated readers, and you know, even if they don't recognize a specific word, they will get the context of it and they'll keep reading. So I never think to myself, oh, is this word too big, or is this concept too mature, or something like that. In terms of like, I might think that about like a situation that I might put the characters in. You know, that might I kind of try to avoid these types of mature things, but I don't think about that in terms of like, is this idea to would that go above someone's head? I just don't think about my readers in that way. I just kind of assume that they're going to get everything. And I think they do, but yeah, I mean, it kind of starts with the age of the character in the book, you know, usually the narrator. And so with middle grade, which is what I've mostly written, they're, you know, pretty much always about 12 years old. So a little bit older than you, Hannah. And, you know, so that kind of like guides a little bit what's going to happen in the book, you know, so they're not going to find themselves in the types of situations that a 15 or a 17-year-old would find themselves in. And so they're limited in certain ways in terms of like, they can't drive and they can't, you know, early on with my first Joshua Dredd book, they didn't have, you know, I had to kind of question, would a 12-year-old have a phone? Now, pretty much if it's within, you know, takes place in our world, then a 12-year-old probably does have a phone.
Yeah, you don't have to ask that question much anymore, do you?
Yeah, it's changed a lot just in the last 5 or 10 years. But yeah, so it really kind of like starts with the age of the characters and kind of what feels natural for them. And I tend to kind of write sort of, I feel like I'm at my best when I'm writing something that has like some little bit of humor in it, you know, or I try to, you know, hopefully more than just a little bit, and, you know, a bit of kind of goofiness in there. And so that, you know, sometimes feels right with a, you know, younger character who might kind of be a little bit of a goofball and hasn't hit that stage where they're sort of like, you know, maybe too cool for everything the way that they would be when they're like 17 or something. There's still that kind of innocent excitement and goofiness. So yeah, that's kind of how I approach writing for young readers. But, you know, each book is different. And, you know, what works for, like, certainly with The Last Human, my most recent book, well, at least a conventional book, that one's narrated by a robot. And so that was a totally different voice. You know, I had to think about how does it express itself in a way that like feels authentic, but also isn't completely dull. You know, you don't want it to just feel like, you know, it shouldn't feel like you're actually listening to, you know, a machine kind of work its way through its programming protocol or something like that. So it's kind of like, I kind of came up with a whole different like language for articulating how a robot would have feelings, you know, quote unquote feelings, in terms of like, if it's scared, you know, maybe its internal processors are, you know, starting to heat up because they're overworked, or, you know, when it's, if it's nervous, you know, it kind of like will think through, instead of the way we would as humans, thinking through 5 or 6 or 1 or 2 maybe options for what to do, it will think through, you know, 1.735 million options for what to do next, you know, and then pick the best one. So that was kind of fun to like, kind of like develop this whole different way of having a character express themselves in a, and that feels, you know, totally human in some ways, but totally unhuman in others. So the answer to your question, your second question was about what I consider writing for adults. And actually, you know, kind of coincidentally, that's one of the things that I'm working on now. I'm writing a book for adults, and I haven't shown it to anyone. I haven't. You're kind of the first people who are hearing about it. So yeah, we'll see what happens with it. But I'm enjoying it. It definitely is. It's different in some ways, but as with everything else, as I mentioned, it all starts with a voice and trying to kind of like think about, you know, okay, now I'm not writing a 12-year-old boy or a robot. I'm writing about, you know, like a person in their mid-30s and who has had a totally different life experience. And, you know, so what is their voice? What is their point of view?
I really appreciate you sharing that, because there's a, you know, I've, like a lot of aspiring writers, you know, I dabble in different genres and even different age groups. And it's good to hear, you know, the style of kind of taking each story as itself and more importantly, probably trying to make sure I am just capturing the voice of whatever the primary character or the, you know, main character is. And so I appreciate that. So you've written, you know, a trilogy, a duology, you've written standalones. Mm-hmm. And of course, I haven't asked you yet if those series works started out as that or if they started as standalones and then grew from there. But do you like writing in one style or the other, or do you have a preference? How's that work for you?
Yeah, you know, I kind of started off, you know, yeah, my first, I've sort of been working my way down in number of books since I started. So the Joshua Dredd was a 3-book series. Legendtopia was a 2-book series. And then since then, I've done only standalone 1-book things. So I don't know what that says about me. Maybe I just kind of like decided I don't want to stick with these, you know, these things for too long. But I do, I mean, there's something really nice about writing a series. I think, you know, thinking back to the Joshua Dredd books, because you already have this familiarity with the characters and with the world, and sort of some of that hard stuff of like figuring out who are these people and what is this world that they're living in, that's, you've done all that work already. And so that makes it, you can just kind of dive right into telling the story. The challenge, of course, is telling a story that feels both familiar and new. You know, you want people to kind of like recognize this space that they're in, while at the same time not feeling like you're just, you know, retreading the same, like walking the same path. So that's kind of tough. But you know, it's something that kind of just, you have to decide with each new project, you know? And so with Joshua Dredd, it just kind of felt like something that could continue to live on and be in multiple books. Same with Legendtopia, actually, I wrote it knowing that it was going to be a duology. And I wanted, the first book kind of takes place in our world with, you know, a prince, kind of basically like a fairy tale prince comes into our world and then is viewing our world in this way that like our world seems magical to him, even though he comes from a magical world. And then in the second book, it's them going into his world. And so I kind of structured it in this kind of mirror way where you have like, you know, sort of thing, the characters are first in our world and we're seeing the magic of our world through a, you know, a fairy tale prince's eyes. And then the second one is, you know, kind of like exploring that actual fantasy world, but bringing along a girl from our, you know, from our, you know, normal, quote unquote, normal world, who then, you know, is kind of like experiencing all this stuff in the same way that the prince did in the first one. Yeah. And then, but since then they've all just kind of felt like they should be standalone things. And that's not to say that I wouldn't go back, you know, sometimes I do kind of find myself thinking, oh, it'd be fun to like revisit that. But I'm also hesitant to do anything until I have like a really good idea for what it would be.
I thought when I was reading Legendtopia, I kind of thought of it as a Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in reverse. And I really like the concept. Okay, so we're going to take another question from the little one here. Go ahead.
What new kid books are you working on now?
Another good question, Anna. Thank you. Okay, so I will go back to something that you said a moment ago, Dan. You said that the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that actually was the big inspiration for Legendtopia. I wanted to tell Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe basically in reverse, to the point where I even considered calling it, you know, something like, I don't remember the exact title, but it was something like The Wizard, The Witch, and The Walk-In Refrigerator or something like that. But, okay, so.
Well, I'll just say real quick that you you did a good job, if that was your intention. It definitely came out. Anyway, back to Hannah's question.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. Okay, so Hannah, you your question was, what do I have in the works for young people specifically? And I have two things. I haven't really had a chance to talk about them with anyone. So you guys are getting the scoop here. But there are two things. So one of them is my follow-up. It's the next book with the same publisher that did The Last Human. And it's going to be called Imaginary. And it kind of feels a little bit like Imaginary. It's a totally different story. It's not a sequel or anything. But it also has an unconventional narrator. You know, with The Last Human, the narrator is a robot, and it has this kind of like outsider's view of humans and of the human world. Imaginary is actually narrated by an imaginary friend. And so we're seeing the world through the eyes of basically an invisible imaginary thing. You know, he's not even a human. He's like a giant ball of purple fur. And
you just blew Hannah's mind a little bit with that, I think.
Oh, awesome. did you ever have an imaginary friend, Hannah?
I may still have many.
Good. Well, this might be a good book for you, because it's actually about a kid. So the imaginary friend, he's the kid that he's been friends with since, you know, for years. Now this kid is kind of quote unquote too old to have an imaginary friend. You know, the kid is 12 and is kind of embarrassed to still be, you know, hanging out with his imaginary friend, but for kind of more serious reasons, actually, he like hung on to this imaginary friend as a means of escape in a way. And so that's a story that I have been wanting to write for years. I've tried to write it a few times and it just never quite fit. You know, it was like a pair of shoes that you put your feet inside and you just know, okay, this just doesn't, the shoes look cool, but the thing, you know, my feet just don't quite fit. And then I kind of came back to it on the third time. I basically tried to write it and it just, the shoes fit this time. And so that's Imaginary. It's a really kind of fun, but also, you know, weird. And there's a lot of like, kind of like fantasy elements going on in it, but it also has a, you know, a deeper emotional thing going on too. And there's a story of grieving and loss and kind of dealing with painful things, but there's also like weird, goofy humor and, you know, sort of imaginary worlds that they explore and stuff like that. So that's Imaginary. The other thing that I have is another Audible original project. It's going to be called Replaced. It's for a slightly older audience, pitched as YA rather than middle grade. So the characters in it are, you know, maybe around 16 or so. And that's basically about the very basic kind of story kind of starts with this question of like, what would you do if you came home one day and found out that you had been replaced by a version of yourself that looks and sounds and acts exactly like you, but is kind of better in every way. And then there's like kind of like a lot of action and mystery and, you know, suspense and stuff going on in there. But that's going to be another Audible project I'm really excited about.
Those are really cool. You really got Hannah with the Imaginary. I think that's a cool story. Awesome. And I can't imagine what it's like to be replaced. And it's a fear. I think it's going to be a good story, because that's a fear I think probably at least at some point everybody has probably had. I think that's going to be a good story.
Thank you.
So we're running a little long on time. Bear with me, because I have one more question.
Sure.
What is, you know, you travel around to schools. What are some of the things that you try and talk to kids and teachers about as you travel through these schools? Is it just about your stories, or is there a theme you try and touch on as you're talking to kids and teachers?
I visit a lot of schools, obviously. I'm not doing so much of that anymore, since schools are pretty much, you know, so many students are going to school at home. But whenever I'm kind of talking to big groups of young people, I always want it to feel relatable to kind of everyone, and not just something where it's like, oh, this will be something that kids who like to write will be able to connect with, or kids who are, you know, big bookworms will love. I also want the kids who, you know, just aren't into writing, or maybe that they have some other passion or some other enthusiasm. I want all of them to kind of get something from my visit. And so I actually kind of like take my journey as a, you know, aspiring writer and then eventually a published author. I kind of take that story and try to apply it to, you know, a broader canvas. And there's sort of this running theme of like, it's kind of like Lee Bacon's tips for becoming a writer or succeeding in just about anything else in life. It's the way that I structure it. And then that has this long acronym, LBTFBAWOSIJAAEIL, because that's so much easier to remember. And then, you know, kind of like break it down into like my own story was like, I, you know, was trying to write for years and I sent my first novel out to a bunch of different publishers, and they all said, no, thank you. We're not interested. And I had to kind of like overcome that rejection and keep working at it. And so, but of course, even if you don't care anything about writing or becoming a published author, you can still understand and hopefully, you know, it will come in handy at some point in life to understand that you're going to hear the word no sometimes. You're not going to just, you know, always have everything succeed. And so I, you know, want people who, when that does happen, to, if it's important to them, to not give up and to keep working at it and, you know, practice and all the things that you really need to do to be successful in whatever it is, not just at writing, but anything in life. So that's kind of the message that I want young people to come away with. And, you know, even if, like I said, even if they're not into writing or not into books, you know, hopefully they'll come away with some better understanding of how to face or how to achieve their goals, even if they, you know, hear the word no every once in a while.
Oh, that's good. We've got to get COVID squared away so we can get you back in schools talking about that. That's good stuff. Perseverance is, I mean, you can't just quit, right? You got to keep going. So.
Exactly.
Well, Lee, how can we learn more about you and where can we get a hold of your books?
I have a website. I think if you just Google my name, you'd probably, it's one of the first things that pops up, if not the first, but the domain name is leebaconbooks.com. I have an author page on Facebook, and I'm kind of getting into Instagram. I haven't really ever done anything with Instagram, but in the last maybe month or so, I've started getting more active on Instagram. I'll have to put a link to that on my website, but I'm also on Instagram if you're interested. Yeah, I mean, you can find my books in all the usual places, bookstores and Amazon and bookshop.org, I think it is, or .net. And you know, and then the Audible originals you can find on Audible. And I think those are actually even free. I think they've kind of changed up their subscriber model. And it's like, if you're an Audible Plus subscriber, you can get it for free. So that's kind of cool. So that's where I am. And then the other ones that I mentioned, Imaginary is coming out, I think in fall, or it's definitely coming out in fall 2021. So it's coming up, and then replaced the Audible original. I don't know when that's going to come out, but it'll come out eventually.
Well, I'm grateful for you sharing that information with us, especially the books that haven't been released yet. We'll have to have you back on if we can to talk about those in the Imaginary in the fall before it releases or as it's being released.
I would be happy to.
Yeah. Lee, thanks for being my guest today. I really appreciate our time.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dan. And thank you, Hannah, for your great questions. Yeah. It's nice meeting you both.
Hey, folks, thanks for listening to this podcast. Get a hold of Lee Bacon's books where you buy your books. Thanks for listening to the episode. As always, please subscribe to the Coffee and Space podcast to learn more about your favorite authors and their stories. Thanks again, everyone. I can't wait until we meet again over a cup of coffee in space.